Hey, do you like the Star Wars? Well, you're not alone, as you're about to find out, if you didn't already know. I'm, of course, Cole Jedi Cole Houston, and with me, as always, on this show especially, is none other than Eddie Medina.
Hello, we're here to celebrate.
We are going to celebrate, and that's about as much as we can get away with legally.
Yeah. Before we had to pay a usage fee.
That's right. We're just going to skirt the edges.
That's right.
Stay tuned later. We're going to do the entire KTEL library, one word.
Yeah. And you have to guess which one word.
That's right. We'll have a contest, and you can win an exciting action figure.
But we're celebrating today.
We're celebrating in many ways. This show, of course, will be, as you're listening to this, if you listen to it at first, shows up on the JCU. It will be on a Sunday, July 18th, which will be a day after Mrs. Jedi Cole and my 28th anniversary, but it was recorded on the same day, which had Eddie a little worried that we were intruding on that celebration. But we're going to intrude a bit on that celebration, yes, to talk about another celebration. Certainly one more important, but one more topical to this show. And that is, of course, Star Wars Celebration.
Yes, the big event, which we found out is not an annual event.
Well, it ought to be, but then again, maybe it's for the best that it isn't, because Star Wars is about to become an annual event every December.
Yeah, yeah.
In one way or another. Probably forever.
And remembering, as we started to remember back, Star Wars Celebration started out as a tri-annual event to coincide with the release of each of the prequel movies. Back in 1999, it preceded The Phantom Menace.
Well, I don't mind if I do. I think I will tri-annual.
Yeah.
I should have affected a more Groucho Marx accent there, but...
You did all right. You did all right. It was at least this time more Groucho and less Watto, like you like.
I don't mind if I do. Yeah, what the hell?
And we've discussed on the show before, every impression either sounds like Billy Bob Thornton's Sling Blade or Watto.
That's right. Some folks call it a Sling Blade. I call it a Kaiser Blade. Yeah, celebration began, I guess you could literally say the celebration began way back in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie pointed out before the show that was to correspond or to be in conjunction with the release of The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of you out there are saying because we didn't know better. got to get my little episode 1-3 jabs in.
Right, right.
Was held in Denver, Colorado. I remember reading about it. You know, it was out of reach for me back then. Wasn't going to happen, but I remember reading about, like any first time anything, no matter how big the production, there's always those little hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Pirates of the Caribbean didn't try to eat the tourists, but still, I think the bitter cold seemed to be the most, trying aspect, were long lines that no one thought about the fact that they were holding a convention of, you know, a massive international draw convention at facilities that may not have been able to hold everyone indoors in the situation where you had lines, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
All reading about, you know, long lines of people out in the cold.
Well, see, and the thing is, you would think because it was the first event and it was back in 1999, you would think it was, oh, it must have been much smaller then. But it wasn't a whole lot. It has grown. Like, I think the last estimated event drew in like 50,000 attendees, I think. You're way off. I think it was something to the effect of 50,000 attendees. That first event drew in 20,000.
Yeah,
attendees.
I think it
was still pretty big. I mean, that's the size of one of our Dallas Comic Cons, which was massive in its own right at the Dallas Convention Center.
Yeah, and I think they may have misinterpreted exactly how rabid the fan base could be for something like this.
Yes.
I don't think they were really anticipating 20,000.
They definitely underestimated. But it was what
no idea the power of Star Wars fandom.
Right, exactly. Well, and the other thing about that first one was that you were saying it was in Denver, Colorado. What the reason why, there's a backstory to why it was held there. That is actually the hometown where the fan club originated from.
Okay, so it was actually a connection then.
It was the hometown of the official Star Wars fan club, which was headed by Dan Madsen. And so they said it was appropriate that the first, of course, fan base, it was an event by the fans for the fans, basically. And now, is it actually owned by Lucasfilm, or is it still owned privately by fans?
Let's say last I heard, anyway, it was owned by Lucasfilm.
Okay.
That was my understanding.
Okay, so then at some point they must have bought them out and took it over as an official thing. So,
Yeah, because the next two were in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
Which would have been in 2002 and 2005.
Yeah, for episode 2 and 3.
And, they were sort of maintaining that connection with the releases of the films.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't until 4 where they decided to go biannual. So you can no longer make that joke, the triangle.
And nowadays you have to actually buy your annual.
Yeah. We're calling them yearbooks now, sir. They haven't called them annuals since 1983.
I'm old people, so I can get away with it. But yes, the next two celebrations, in fact, from my research, it indicates that starting with Celebration 2, they're referred to as being held by LucasArts.
Oh, okay.
So I guess they at some point I think even the fan club got swallowed up by Lucasfilm as well, perhaps under the LucasArts banner, because that would seem fitting, as Lucasfilm itself was just sort of the parent company of a lot of other aspects.
Uh-huh.
And then you move into Celebration 4. We're going to kind of gloss over these because neither of us were at any of them. Mm-hmm. We kind of hit upon this to talk about Celebration. It was like, hey, that's going on this weekend. Why don't we talk about Celebration Europe?
This is unusual. If I could just jump in real quick, that first one I mentioned had 20,000 attendees, and I may be way off on my estimation of what they draw in currently, because they said the second event brought in 75,000 people over the 3 days, and. But then it dropped down, Celebration 3, this is interesting, dropped down to just 10,000 fans.
That's bizarre.
And I wonder if that has anything to do with the fact that people getting burned out or disappointed in the prequels.
That may well be. You know, it's an unfortunate byproduct of it, but by episode 3, they may have lost some... since it was sort of like, oh, this is prequel-based, this is movie-based, the perception might have been there.
Well, and what's odd is Celebration 3 was the first one to actually have George Lucas in attendance to speak. And it was like, wait, what?
You missed out on this because you were so, well, I guess, if you want to blame anyone, okay. it was Lucas.
Sorry. I see, this is why I need to research ahead of time. Celebration 3 had 34,000 fans, which is still a drop.
Oh, yes.
Where I saw 10,000 fans, that was 10,000 fans to come hear George Lucas speak.
Okay.
So it wasn't as horrible as it could have been. You bring in Papa Lucas and it drops to 10,000 fans.
It's staggering, though, to imagine 10,000 fans crammed into.
Oh, I know. I know exactly.
One space until you see the throng of people, because Celebration 4 apparently just brings in about 35,000 as well.
Okay.
That was the one that was staged to correspond with the 30th anniversary.
Okay. Well, that's cool. So.
And that was the first to be held in Los Angeles, California. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is I actually, have some anecdotal information on that one.
Okay.
Jeffrey Carlton was there with his Star Wars Super Collector's Wish book, or just attending. I'm not sure which. I think he was actually there promoting and selling. And what struck me as odd is, you know, you think of Los Angeles as one of these big metropolitan cities that just never sleeps.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how they left the convention center in the evening and the city had gone to bed. There was nothing. If you parked in the parking garage, you had to be out by 7 because it was locked up for the night.
Oh my gosh. No, see, I would have assumed it was like a party town. I know. I thought like,
you know, sunset, the day's just beginning, but no, right. Everybody's like, I'm going the hell home. And well, it may be because, you know, nobody lives in Los Angeles. They all commute there.
Okay.
So they probably have to leave by 7 so they can get home in time to turn around and do the whole commute the next day.
That reminds me, and Cole, you may have experienced the same thing because we were both there the same weekend for LubbockCon. Not to down LubbockCon or the wonderful city that it is, because it was an amazing event. But we packed up for the day and went to go find some place to eat, and every place we came to was already closed for the day.
Oh, my. Wow.
And we were like, it's only 8 o'clock.
The area where we were, which was not there, close to the convention center, there's a lot more of the generica out there. By their very, you know, by corporate mandate are open later.
Yeah, and we were looking for like a hole-in-the-wall type restaurant, like something that was unique.
Some local flavor, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently. And it was self 2017, no local flavor after.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
Well, what's so funny is it was so bad I even made the comments like, does this town have like a vampire problem that we're not aware of? And, like, everyone goes in before sundown?
It was like founded by vampires.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone goes into
like reverse vampires, maybe. You have to be.
Well, no, for people who don't want to get, you know.
Oh, get attacked by the vampires.
Yeah, get their blood. Yeah. Want to suck your blood, your Lubbock blood. But anyway, celebration.
Right, all right. I can't imagine that, you know, that was the first time this show has ever gone off the rails.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not. Then Celebration goes international.
Right.
Because you had Celebration 4 in Los Angeles in 2007, and then very shortly thereafter, Celebration Europe in London. Mm-hmm. And the following year, Celebration Japan.
Near
Tokyo. Or, yeah, 2 years.
Again, they're doing their overseas ones like a biannual event.
Well, actually, Celebration Europe was in 2007 and Japan
was it?
2008.
Wikipedia, you failed me again.
Ah.
You're right. Okay, yeah, you're right.
It would be another couple of years after Japan before Celebration 5 hit for the first time in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
Which was to correspond with the 30th anniversary of a new, The Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they were still maintaining that every 3-year mark by Celebration 5 by virtue of sort of couching it in conjunction with a major Star Wars motion picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by Celebration 6, they said, we don't want to wait 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. It got to be almost like CSI. You had CSI, CSI Miami, CSI, everything else.
Yeah, yes.
You had Celebration Europe, Celebration Japan, or Grand Theft Auto of Seoul.
And, of course, 6 was the sole one I'd been able to attend myself, and we've done a show and I've talked about that at length. But it was amazing to see that volume of people and that volume of costumes and that volume of representation of the international phenomenon.
Yeah.
You know, we all kind of know it's an international thing, but to see people, to hear, you know, overhear conversations in many languages, to just see how much stuff people brought with them from the other side of the world just to be there. You know, like, good Lord, your travel expenses must have been half just luggage fees.
Yeah, because right.
Of all the amazing costuming that was being brought in and by people from other countries. So
I can only imagine what it's like now, because that would have been 2008. You said,
let's see, Celebration 7 was 2012.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. Okay, 2012. So even so, the whole costuming scene has grown even more since then. It seems like every year, like,
when will be insane because the costuming, costume choices have exponentially increased.
And that's what you've talked about before, like some of the things you saw, and then, like, as listeners remember, we had Scott Horn and Bobby Blakey on to talk about their experience. They talked about, like, the crazy ideas people had for their Star Wars costumes out there, things you would not have thought of. And was it you, Cole, that said, or maybe it was Bobby that said, like, one guy even dressed up as the rebel person who has, like, the little neon things that he holds.
Oh, yeah, I think it may have been Scott or Bobby. Yeah, the kind of flight crew.
Yes, flight crew person, you know, like that directs the planes.
Who invests in that?
Right.
Obviously the person who wants to have the unique costume, or like the guy that I saw that was one of the dancers from the Bob Fosse choreography.
That's what it was. Okay, I remember there was one even more ridiculous.
I'm like, nobody will get that, but that is dead on, right down to the shaggy beard and the pheasant feather tail. And oh, good night, that was amazing. And I think I may have dug up the picture I had of him standing next to the two girls in the Bantha costume.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. The 2%
horse motif as a Bantha.
Yeah.
So that was pretty amazing. I was trying to see if I could glean how many people were in attendance for that one, but it was just staggering to walk through that cavernous center there in Orlando, and it just the thing went on, and they were only using half the facility.
Oh, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, it was just, good Lord, this is a huge building. It is as big as, you could put some small towns in there for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You could literally stage a production of Our Town and build the entire town inside this building.
Yeah.
But it was, this was the point where you were really starting to see that exponential growth and so many different organizations.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that it's going to be even bigger for the next one. And then would of course come the Celebration Europe 2 in 2013.
Electric Boogaloo.
That's right. Except they don't boogaloo in Europe. You don't do that here.
Snobs.
Yes. Then we have Celebration 7 back in Anaheim, California.
That was Bobby and Scott's big trek.
Yes, and then, as we speak, upon Celebration Europe, hence the title Far, Far Away for us, because right now there's an amazing event going on far, far away from where Eddie and I are at this moment.
And I do not know of any of our friends or listeners that are at Europe, but if you are, please mention that to us on Facebook or something so we can actually correct ourselves. But I've been scouring social media to see if anybody I knew was actually at Celebration Europe. But a lot of people talked that they were going to go, but if they actually made it, I'm not quite sure.
And if you are listening from anywhere in Europe and you you are going, because I've, all of the metrics on the Jedi Cole universe, we get a lot of European countries dialing us in. I don't know which shows. I hope this is among them because of that international appeal. And, if you're listening to us and you've been, by the time you're listening to this, even if it's weeks later, drop me a line at jcumail@yahoo.com and let me know about your experience there, and we'll read it on the live show sometime.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Just to, kind of have that little connection. Like, I was at Celebration Europe, and then I listened to your show about it, and scoffed at how wrong you were about us.
I know, exactly, right?
But definitely, we're fascinated by this because it is, for some people, it's an, once every few years, that's their big thing that they're able to go do, and that's their big pilgrimage of Star Wars. And for some of us, it's been a one-off thing, and for some, it's yet to happen.
Yeah.
But it looks like Star Wars Celebration is geared up to be around a long time.
Yeah.
Which means if you haven't been there, you haven't missed anything but the past ones. You haven't missed your chance, in other words.
It's funny that you brought that up, because I do remember and it's probably because of the fans. We weren't as well connected because of how young the internet still was in 1999.
Absolutely.
But I do remember fans talking about that after the fact, after the celebration in Denver happened, that they were all saying, gosh, you know, we would have loved to have gone. People almost had the mindset that this was a one-off type of event.
Yeah.
No one had the idea that.
Again.
Exactly. And maybe it's because, again, there was such a long stretch between one and two. People didn't, like the casual Star Wars fan maybe didn't put together that, they're releasing it every 3 years. But I think, again, it was so early on that maybe we hadn't received word that this was going to be an ongoing type of event. But it is cool. And yeah, again, like Cole's saying, if any of our listeners in Europe are going, it'd be cool to get some firsthand stories. So as you're listening to this podcast and having your tea and crisps, you know, maybe you can, put down the crisps for a minute and, like, you know, send us an email.
You can set your scones aside for...
You're right. not the same problem with tea and scones and
stuff. That's right.
We're just jealous because we...
Yeah, it's pretty much like if you listen to Hey Kids Comics about this time of the year, which we have not done yet, is our annual rant about... All the different exclusives that are available at San Diego Comic-Con that we have zero access to. This is the same sort of thing without as much bitterness. Andy and I can bring a lot of bitterness to the table on that.
We should talk about some of the exclusives that Europe is offering, because there are some cool ones. There are some that are just like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of so-so.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was actually, as you were starting to mention that, setting aside the crumpets, I was actually looking at some of the exclusives. So it worked out well. We were both on exactly the same both actually on the same wavelength there.
Yeah. So what's one exclusive that may have jumped out at you, first off, Cole?
Well, you know, one of the things I really love is Celebration seems to bring these wonderful conceptual, especially from the standpoint of the work of different artists who wind up being contributors on the t-shirts.
Yeah.
Only in recent years have I really just started getting a whole lot of t-shirts.
Actually,
I wasn't a t-shirt person, but then I hit upon my trademark t-shirt and Hawaiian shirt combination that has become
trademark would be one way of saying it. Another way would be saying sickness.
There's that as well, but we have to pick and choose the way we
Right.
The descriptions of what we're all about. One that I thought was really clever in the t-shirts being offered was a British flag motif.
Yes!
Utilizing the X-Wing in a couple of the stripes.
The Union Jack X-Wing shirt. That was one of my favorites.
And I also love the one that invokes a British street sign, a very European street sign, and also invokes BB-8. So it speaks beautifully to the locale. It's the Mind the Droid t-shirt. And it's it's kind of the circular sign that has a blue line that bisects it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At the top of the circle is, of course, perched BB-8's head. It says Mind.
Oh, that's clever. Yeah, the only BB-8 shirt that I saw that they're offering was the emoji BB-8, where he's got the little, you know, flame thumbs up, and there's a heart next to him.
Oh yes, yeah. I've noticed there's some emoji pins that somebody has produced.
Yeah, and
a whole slew of them.
that's the big thing. I think there's like 20 or 40. There's a lot. There's a lot spanning all the movies. And Rebels. They have the Rebel characters.
Oh, that's true. And if it's anything like the pins that were offered at Celebration 7, here's what to do if you want to get them all. Forget it.
Yeah, some of them already sold out.
Yeah, I heard tales of Celebration 7. Just the things were gone before anybody knew. You know, at Celebration 6, somebody, the Celebration store offered one of those floaty type pins.
Yeah.
Where you have an element inside the base near the top of the pin that is suspended in liquid and slides around like, you know, the naked pin type thing. Or you always see that kind of thing. They had one where it was Luke in the Bacta tank.
Yeah.
Which is very clever. This one, the pin they have for Europe is no less clever. It is the lake on the planet where Maz Kanata's place was.
Yeah. So
you have the X-Wing.
Oh!
It will skim the surface of the lake as you...
Oh, Poe Dameron's X-Wing.
Yeah, as it crosses the...
That's clever.
Yeah, I thought that's a neat idea. There's also a BB-8 soccer ball.
Of course, so, because that's the first thing we all associated him with when they first showed him was a soccer ball.
Exactly. So, you know, alternating panels are the orange and gray panels of his sphere.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead, because there was one I want to talk about in a minute that I had to actually do some research on.
Well, one thing that I thought was cool, and I know they've done this at the past events, where it's called the collecting track.
Good thing to bring up because I had to go looking to see what they were offering.
Yeah, and just like Cole, you participated in this, I'm sure, when you were there, where your collecting track was when y'all had the little character enamel pins that came on cards.
Yeah, they were the little, they were almost like cloisonne pins without a pin.
Yes.
And that's the first appearance of the Star Tots, which came back.
That's it. I couldn't
Europe.
Think of it.
The first wave was all classic 20 characters from the original Star Wars. I think Celebration Europe was Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
And Celebration 7 was Empire Strikes Back, oddly enough.
Yeah.
May have the verse. I'm having to look here and tell. And what was clever about that was like... each incarnation, like the Empire Strikes Back base one, replaced the Death Star in the logo with Cloud City.
Yeah.
But I love that. And, of course, those three runs of the Star Tots, which I was curious what they were going to be for this one, but apparently they're retiring the Star Tots in favor of other things. But that replaced the little cereal boxes.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
When I'm rich, I'll own them all.
For Europe this year, what they're doing for their collector, the collecting track, and the concept is every time you go to one of these panels, you get a different thing. Gus Lopez, who's a for Star Wars collectors, we know who Gus Lopez is. He's known as a super collector, and I guess he's the one that coordinates this every year. What they've done is they're giving away medallions, and not just like, you know, your typical medallions with Star Wars imagery. The set of 12 that they're doing are each based on one of the classic Kenner figures. Vehicles. So the A-Wing, TIE Fighter, Shul Tiderium. The two that jumped out at me that I thought was super cool that they included in the 12 was the Imperial Transport that
Cole has, the troop transport.
We've poked fun at relentlessly on this show. I thought, oh my gosh, if I had to own one, it's got to be that one. The other one that I was not expecting was the Ewok ramming. The battle wagon with the big skull on top. I guess it's supposed to be like a Bantha skull or something.
Some creature of that, of the moon door.
Maybe from the Ewok movies that we never saw. But yeah, with the batting ram, you know, in the front, the swinging thing.
And I'm going to point out, before we get too much further, this morning I went looking for Star Wars Celebration medallions.
Yep.
There were no Star Wars Celebration Europe 2016 medallions offered. As of this moment,
yeah,
one has appeared, and ironically, it is the Imperial Troop Transport.
Oh, how much is it going for?
Their asking price is like $34, something like that.
American or in crumpets?
It's actually, it's in U.S., so it's a bit of a ripoff since Brexit. Oh, too soon?
Ah.
$33.09 is the buy it now price.
American, $33.09, yeah.
And it probably costs some money to get it shipped over here, too. But sure. The thing about it is, past Celebration collecting tracks, yes, yeah. It costs you an additional $20-something dollars to get it shipped over here at the outrageous price this seller is asking for shipping.
Wow.
I'm going to wait till the American fans get home and start selling off.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, in the past, Celebration Europe had the neat thing with these is there are color elements to these medallions.
Yeah.
So their background is colored, so it really makes the image of the toy pop. But there were some sculpted medallions that were in kind of a pewter, kind of a gunmetal color in the past. What was neat is one Celebration Europe celebrated Star Wars toy collecting throughout Europe. So they would have, like, one of the coins was the Death Squad Commander with the Belgian logo.
Yeah.
One was the Finnish logo of the, and the image, you know, the etched image was the figure of the Tusken Raider, or the Sand Raider, rather.
Yeah.
But it would have the Star Wars logo, as it would have appeared on the packaging in Finland.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really clever, kind of approach to celebrating all of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the past they had done some, there's some other coins from Celebration collecting tracks. Mm-hmm. I think Celebration 4 had some coins in the States, and one of them was like a Sand People action figure and the Sandcrawler.
Oh, yeah.
Etched into it. And Celebration Japan did a wonderful thing because it was celebrating toys that were unique to Japan, like claw machine toys or just weird stuff that was only released in the Japanese market.
Yeah.
Like they have the Luke Skywalker claw machine toy. If you've ever seen that, that image is popping in your head right now. So you can imagine what the face of that coin looks like, or this weird Chewbacca that I've seen. So it's kind of neat that the, you know, different ideas are coming back around. The idea of the medallion is a great one.
Yeah.
And sure. I'd like to have a previous Europe and a Japanese coin one of these days, just to have one of those as a sample.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all right. Just that, you know, I like the idea of having a sample of each of those, a representative of each of those different celebration giveaways.
Yeah, you're not necessarily like the Pokemon mindset where you got to catch them all. You just want to.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, you know, I could have entertained thoughts of collecting the original 20 Star Tots because I came home with some extras.
Yeah.
I did some trades there, and I wound up just keeping the four Cantina creatures.
Yeah.
But I could have tried to amass all 20. I could try to amass all of one, but I just like having a representative sample. I've got a couple of Star Tots from Empire. I've got a Man-O-Man, which was the one Europe that I really thought was the most fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe eventually I'll pick a few more up here and there, but I'm definitely not going to go Pokemon, as it were.
That was like me back when I was trying to get, I forget what the number that's in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, whether it's 12 or 13 Crystal Skeletons. I was trying to get like 12 or 13 Crystal Skeletons so I could have them all sitting in a circle like
it.
And I got it up to 4 before giving up. I gave up after 4.
It was funny because I was saving up the proofs of purchase for that back in the day, and we'll move on. But do I really care that much? And then about that time, somebody was selling one for $15 at a convention.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's worth more to me than trying to get all the pieces that I need to get the thing for quote unquote free. So. But one of the celebrations.
I actually bought enough. Because I got the whole run. I got enough proofs of purchase where I actually sent off for 4. So I actually had 4 that I got for free. Ended up selling the 3 extras, but I still got the 1.
Well, that's good. So at least you still have that after that hard won.
yeah.
Lunch. And one of the items I noticed they was a plush toy. And at first I got confused. I didn't recognize this creature from anything. And from the name I got confused. I misread it initially as lolcats. So I thought it was this like Ken Weiss has.
Yeah.
Blue milk.
No, it's the lolcat from Rebels.
Yeah, I'm not not into Rebels yet, so I wasn't familiar.
Yeah, with no, lolcat. I saw that and I was like, they made the lolcat. Oh my!
I know they look adorable. I don't even know what they are, and I want them.
I got to get one. I was like,
you got to get them all because I guess technically there's just one, but but it did inspire the lol lolcat. Can eyes have blue milk?
Yeah.
Can I has blue milk? That was it.
Yeah. I got it. I don't usually go crazy over the exclusives. I can give or take them, you know. But when I saw the lolcat plush, I thought, okay, I've got to get one.
Yeah, that one. Another one. You hope somebody's got a satchel full of those coming back.
Right. I got to get one of those.
One of the other clever T-shirts I noticed was a milk carton. The facing panel shows like a silhouette of the Lugga Beast, which is the creature from Jakku. That the little Tito or whatever his name was riding.
Tebow.
But the other facing panel says missing, and has a picture of Constable Zuvio.
I've obviously have not done my proper research. Where are you finding these?
Those are on the celebration.com website in the show info celebration store file path.
Okay, a celebration store. I'm not seeing that. Well, anyway, okay, go ahead.
I basically found it by just looking up celebration Europe exclusives.
Yeah.
And somehow found the celebration.com/show info/celebration store.
Okay, yeah. What I came up with has, not cool items like that.
Another really fun one is the pub signs.
Yeah, I didn't see that either. Set. I'm totally looking in the wrong place.
there's the Jolly Jedi,
uh-huh.
The Twin Suns, the Rusty Droid, and the Minok and Falcon.
Good night.
And they're designed very much in the motif of the classical British pub.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd almost imagine that, you know, you'd have Simon Pegg running around to all of those different pubs trying to drink them all. And there's even a Rusty Droid bottle opener available.
Wow.
I can't help but wonder if I'm hoping it's the type that would be magnetic, so you could actually just sort of hang it on your fridge, you know?
Yeah.
Have that magnetic back to it, because that would be kind of fun to have. But, you know, there's a ton of really cool stuff. T-shirts being one of the heaviest exclusives. They're not as physical exclusive rich as the American celebrations have been.
Yeah. Well, what's cool about the shirts is just the artwork. Like, they're putting the badge art on some of these shirts. And I got to tell you, the one with Luke, with the badge art for Luke Skywalker, it's just that image of him turning around and looking at
Ray.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just
that's a sharp looking.
Right. It's striking. If I had to have a shirt, it would have to be that one.
Very, like you said, they're very striking graphics. It's, the art, very photorealistic,
Yeah, I'd love to know who the artist is, because he did a great job on the Ray shirt, too. The Ray, you know, it's like...
And it seems like one of the traditions of the T-shirts for Celebration is to have the his and hers.
Yeah.
And it looks like for Celebration Europe, it is the his and hers, I love you, I know, as Han and Leia emojis.
Yeah.
So you have a heart-shaped-eyed... Princess Leia emoji.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think the emoji thing is like their theme this year,
yeah,
because there's so many things showing up with the with those emojis.
Oh yeah, there's also a another T-shirt. It's a Maz Kanata emoji plus a Chewbacca emoji,
yes,
equals a heart.
That was the one that really caught my attention. Was I like that Wookiee?
Where's my boyfriend?
Yes, I love the Maz Chewie equals heart shirt.
Yeah, you got the impression maybe Chewie really was like, you know, I forgot something back at the Falcon. What?
Right.
I forgot to stay there.
Yeah, right. It's like, for fellow fans of Lethal Weapon, it's like in Lethal Weapon 3, where that security guard, the armored truck security guard lady, you know, a heavy set lady, just loud and funny, like she just develops this crush on Murtaugh and just proceeds to like want to track him down at the police station to give him cookies and everything else. That's what I imagine the Maz Chewbacca relationship is that Lethal Weapon 3.
Yeah, she's like his stalker, like little wonder.
Yeah, but in a friendly, fun way.
Well, one of the others I really liked, you know, and not just because I'm silly for Admiral Ackbar, was the Admiral Ackbar's fish and chips T-shirt.
Yeah,
because it's got Admiral Ackbar in the British Admiralty of yesteryear, kind of with the epaulettes and all the filigree and the bands and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and in kind of a semi-profile, and then this, you know. Sign kind of motif going on, established 1983. But between Admiral Ackbar's fish and chips and the established date is one of those Naboo fishes. Mm-hmm. Not sure if it's a fa, la, or what, but it is one of the actual fishes designed for episode one. And I thought that's very clever to put an actual Star Wars fish design into the mix.
I see it. Finally found the store. And oh my gosh, I have got to get that Admiral Ackbar shirt.
Oh,
that is amazing. Yes, it's got that Naboo creature on it.
Yeah.
Established 1983. How freaking cool is that?
I love the little clever things like that where there are nods to so much. It's a very layered joke.
Oh my gosh.
So many things like the Zuvio milk carton. Don't you really get it?
Oh, I love the coffee mug teacup shirt.
Yes.
British, they grip it with all four fingers and thumb. Posh, one that had the pinky up. Nobility, two fingers up. Jedi, it's Yoda's hand levitating the cup of tea. I thought that is clever. Oh my gosh.
There's some brilliant stuff. And it makes me.
Oh, I see the milk carton shirt.
It makes me the more anxious to see what's coming up for Celebration, 8 coming up this year, next year?
Yeah, I believe so.
So it's, it's neat to see what all's going on over there. You mentioned the medallions earlier, and that's a part, if you've never been to Celebration before, they do a wonderful job of arranging, and I think this has been going on since the very first one, collecting panels where they'll bring in people to speak on very specific aspects of Star Wars collecting.
Yeah.
Catherine and I attended several of them. One of them was on Star Wars music, which turned out to be far more fascinating than I would have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Because the presenter was an avid collector of Star Wars music and had samples that he cited of both licensed and, in some countries, completely unlicensed Star Wars albums.
Gosh.
Yeah, you would just go and probably buy a Star Wars album and cut your own from that and sell it on the streets of Cairo.
Right.
Or it's in the sand for 100 years. It'll be worth a fortune.
Oh my gosh, I just saw this shirt for the Fett family crest.
Ah!
Did you see that one? It's a European crest with the Fetts.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow, that is so freaking clever. That is so clever. And the Resistance football jersey. And,
The sanitation.
Yes.
Sanitation shirt.
And this one is so simple, but it's so effective. It's the polo shirt with Rey riding the speeder as a little symbol on the left chest. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. How much spend a fortune. Get?
I know. You could spend a fortune on this stuff. You know, there's the First Order Football Club jersey, which, you know, it's very much speaking to their audience. You could market that here, but you'd get a lot of, I don't get it, or, you know, that's a neat design, but not really recognizing it for what it is.
Yeah.
And those stupid loft cats are now calling me, and I don't even know what they are, but I want them.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I know I want it.
They need to make the loft rats, because that's what the...
The thing is, I looked up, I got curious, so I actually researched loth cats. It says loth cats are, you know, indigenous to some planet where they hunt loth rats. I'm like, well, that makes, yes, of course, the loth cat would, it's like the old loth, the lady who swallowed a loth fly.
Oh, yeah.
I should swallow a loth fly, perhaps she'll die.
Yeah. When I was... It always reminded me of something out of Alice in Wonderland. A loth cat sounds like it's something from Alice in Wonderland. And then the loth rat, loth cat, and yeah. But another
thing. Like the ones they didn't mention at the table at the Mad Hatter's unbirthday party?
Yes.
Oh, I simply ran out of time and forgot to introduce loth cat and loth rat.
Yeah.
You'll have to wait 100 years.
In addition to the store exclusives, you know, some of the exhibitors have exclusives.
Yes, as always.
And one of the ones I thought was thinking that the European crowd got a one-up on us. You know, for those who collect the Jack Specific figures, everyone was so disappointed when the Phasma 20-inch figure came out. It was just like a dull gray, and people were customizing them, spray-painting them to be a shiny silver. Well, the Jack Specific that you can get there at Celebration Europe, it's a shiny silver 20-inch Phasma. And I thought, why didn't Jack Specific release that to begin with?
I know! I didn't pay extra for that.
Yeah, and so it's cool because you can actually get one that's actually shiny silver and not like that dull gray that we got. And I thought, that's pretty
cool. Okay, I'm kind of imagining what a fortune that would cost to get your hands on this.
Oh, I know.
There's a Black Series Kylo Ren that is an unhooded Kylo Ren that comes with the standard of the First Order.
Yeah.
Have an actual standard flag. And it comes with the Melty helmet.
It
comes with Grandpa's old helmet.
The Melty helmet. Well, that's cool because for collectors of the Black Series, that would be a cool item to have is the Melty helmet.
Absolutely. And
that's when we can get it, I guess.
Yeah, when you know, the pop vinyl for collectors of those, you know, or collectors of any given big thing like this are going to be wincing because, you know, there is that Pokemon mentality and the pop vinyl, if you want Bespin Luke with a missing hand.
Yeah, oh, I know, I thought that was clever. The missing hand Luke.
Apparently 4LOM is only going to be available.
I know,
now that's just cool. I mean,
it is.
So, Luke, that's okay, that's a variation. I'll give you that.
But for those who are trying to amass the Bounty Hunter set and then they're missing that one 4LOM.
Yeah.
Because I know several collectors who just collect the Bounty Hunters. So how messed up is that they would have to pay that much extra on the collector's market just to complete their set?
Well, it seems a tradition at Celebration that there's always like a basket of plush Ewoks available.
Oh, yeah.
And in this case, it's a basket of plush Ewoks, one of which includes a little plush Walkling, looks like.
Yes, the Walkling.
You can't say Walkling without saying,
It's kind of misleading because they promoted as the three-piece set, but in reality it's four pieces when you include the Walkling.
Well, it's kind of like a baker's dozen. It's what's known as a British trio.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people don't realize the Beatles were actually considered a trio.
Oh, really? So who was the Walkling in the Beatles?
Ringo.
Ringo. So every time we say Ringo, we had to say, aww.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's very British, but you have to say it.
Yes. Poor Ringo. Aww.
Huh?
Yeah, so for my fellow Ewok lovers, yeah, if you want your complete set of of Ewoks,
British trio, you're probably going to pay some big bucks.
Yeah, that's true.
The Jack Specific one, I think, is the one that annoys me personally even more. Originally, it was the Kylo Ren. It was kind of annoying. It was like, you know, I kind of half want one, but I kind of don't really care.
Yeah.
But the fact that it has the little, the melty helmet and the standard, it's just, for a loose figure collector, it's like, damn you.
Mm-hmm.
That's much more appealing as a loose figure than as a, you know, still in the box figure.
Sure.
Because that's what that stuff's there for. That's what it's about. And, I don't know, what it costs, for these things, but they're, whatever it's costing you in adjusted, dollars to pounds is, gonna get a lot worse when it's adjusted dollars to collector's dollars.
Yeah. And with every celebration, there always seems to be a new release on the Star Wars hoodies where you zip over the hood and it's a mask.
Oh, yes.
Well, this year it's Kylo Ren.
Yes, indeed.
But it's kind of lackluster in the design. It almost just looks like a black hood.
Yeah, the hood itself doesn't jump out at you.
No, not at all.
The ribbing on the arms kind of invokes the character, but...
It really doesn't scream Kylo Ren to me. I thought it was kind of odd that they didn't do a little bit more with the mask, unless this is an early prototype that they displayed, but I don't see why.
Yeah, well, and also one of the things that came out of a term that came out of me attending a lot of those collector panels that I'd never heard before was focus collection.
Yeah, focus
collection. And I realized, damn, I've been a Hammerhead focus collector and a Death Star focus collector for years, and I never realized it. So with that in mind, I think the prototype Boba Fett focus collecting has come of its own in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Between the Macquarie prototype figure from the 3 3/4 inch line, and the Black Series,
the pop vinyl,
you have the Black Series, the Walgreens exclusive white Boba Fett, which technically is just a regular Boba Fett that they didn't paint, but still. So jumping on that, Mattel had released for Celebration Europe the, you know how they have those cars that are.
Yeah.
Hot Wheels that are Star Wars shaped, character shaped.
Yeah.
There is a prototype Boba Fett.
Yeah. It's funny because as I was scrolling, I just assumed that was like a First Order Stormtrooper.
That was my First Order impression as well, but then I kind of took a closer look and realized I saw the little antenna, the Camel View and Finder.
Yeah, yeah.
And, realized, okay, so for those of you out there who think, well, I don't have to worry about exclusives because what I collect is so obscure, damn it, there's a prototype Boba Fett exclusive. And I'm trying to remember if there are San Diego Comic-Con Star Wars exclusives as well. Undoubtedly there are, but it's just exclusivity and... is a bane of collecting that has continued to perpetuate. And one of these days we'll probably have to do a Hey Kids Comics crossover because it heavily affects both of my show's core topics is how exclusivity has really hamstrung the market.
Yeah.
Or hamstrung the collector because exclusivity has emerged hand in glove with international resale.
Yeah.
Via things like eBay. So it's just made it untenable. And occasionally, you know, there will be, like Mattel has been known to occasionally offer their exclusives on their website. But for the most part, it's just open season for the guy with the truckload of cash to come in.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now I found one Kylo Ren Black Series opening bid
$124.99. Gosh.
It's gonna be that bad, folks. It's, in fact, looking over the Celebration Europe stuff that's been offered immediately.
Yeah.
It seems like the out of the gate pricing is just outrageous.
Well, and you've given this bit of advice, Cole, but I'll reinstate it, that for those who are patient, just be patient, because it's just a matter of time before you can find these things at a deal, maybe not at a steal, but at least get a deal on them. Because my thing that I've been holding out for is the San Diego Comic-Con Indiana Jones six-figure pack that had, you know, the characters you wanted to see in the regular line, but they didn't get around to doing because it didn't, didn't sell well. And so, of course, out of the six, you get yet another Indiana Jones that you don't need. You already have six of them because it came with every vehicle, horse, and Lost Ark and everything else. But you did get all the other characters that you were hoping to get. And so that's been eluding me. But given time, I've seen them starting to pop up on eBay. Sometimes they're loose, which is fine because I take mine out anyway. I'd rather buy them loose cheaper. They show up loose or showing them up as on individual cards that people have busted open the box and taken out all six carded figures. So it's just a matter of time before you can get these at an okay price.
Oh, absolutely. A good Star Wars example is, of course, the Celebration II Jorg Sokol X-Wing pilot figure.
Oh, yeah.
When Jorg, which was the very hastily made George Lucas X-Wing pilot.
Yeah.
Back when the sculpts were finally veering away from He-Man, but still hadn't quite made it to really attempting to look like they do in the movies sculpts on the 3¾-inch line. They just slapped a new head on an X-Wing pilot body that I guess you're supposed to imagine looks a little bit like George Lucas. And it was Commander Jorg Sokol, and it came with a Micro Machines X-Wing and a gun. And that thing was just outrageous for years. People were trying to get $60, $100 for them. Uh-huh. And when I finally purchased one, I think with shipping, I paid all of $12 or $14 didn't have to have it. It was just one of those novelties I'd like to have had. And it's one of the few things I didn't take out of the package, because without the package, it's kind of meaningless.
Well, out of the package, it just looks like Buddy Holly with an X-Wing fighter pilot suit on.
Yeah, it was like the Chris Christopherson X-Wing pilot or something along those lines. But, yeah, there's just if you wait around long enough, Celebration 3 electronic talking Darth Vader exclusive. Looking at eBay right now, here's a seller, $8.99.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get your hands on these things later, often at a better price because the market calms down. And admittedly, some stuff just never shows back up at a decent price. So it's hard to gauge, but if you follow Master Yoda's advice, patience, you know, just make note of these celebration things that you're interested in and jump at the ones that might turn out to be the hardest to find, and let the others ride for now.
Yeah, exactly. So, since we're talking Celebration Europe, should we talk about the announcement of a now canon Grand Admiral Thrawn?
I think we have to. There's a, you know, we got so into the collectible aspect that we nearly forgot some of the things that just... That was the springboard for some new announcements. So, yes, is this, I believe, in Rebels? We're now officially embracing
Season
Thrawn.
3. This is a big one. This is a big one for me, at least personally, because I love Grand Admiral Thrawn. He has been one of, in my mind, if I had to list my top five Star Wars villains, Thrawn is definitely in the top five because he is such a deep, well-written character. If you have not read Timothy Zahn's Thrawn stuff, it is amazing. And I can't say he's underrated because he's not, because so many fans embrace the character of Grand Admiral Thrawn to the point that everyone was, not me, but everyone else was convinced that he was going to be whenever the sequels got made, he was going to be the antagonist.
Now, yeah, he would be the new big bad.
Really, and I knew that wasn't going to be the case, but it doesn't diminish the fact that I just love the character. And we're finally getting him into the new official Disney canon, you know, and not only that, not only is he going to be in Rebels season 3, but Timothy Zahn is writing a new Thrawn book. So that's even bigger news to me than the Rebels thing. So yeah, the for me the Grand Admiral Thrawn announcement was a big one.
Well, that's nice because we've already seen some incredible synergy between the new post dismissal of pre-Disney canon.
Yeah,
and this is exactly what I told people back when they were decrying that everything that had come before Disney, except that which was on screen, effectively primarily the big screen, was no more. I said, what you're missing, the big point of all this that so many missed, was this isn't a, you know, we're not flushing all this down the toilet.
Yeah.
They're simply allowing for cherry picking of the best aspects without having to be beholden to their original source material. Frankly, the sheer volume of expanded universe is much of, and I've said this many times, as much of a rein as Lucasfilm claimed to have on it, they really didn't rein it in.
No.
There is much contradictory material out there that if you looked at it logically, it's like, that wouldn't work because it counters this and this, which are also canon, so how can all three be canon? And that's the big problem. Now you say, okay, all that goes away, but if we want Thrawn, we'll put Thrawn in. If we want Mara Jade, we'll put Mara Jade in. But it's not going to be the Mara Jade that you saw emerge out of this storyline and is going to do this and is going to marry Luke and is going to do this and that. This is the Mara Jade who's going to have a legitimate part of a larger story that we've already started to tell.
That's why I'm excited about Thrawn, because I'm hoping is that they're going to weave him into the Rebel story in a smart way, but not necessarily, we don't necessarily have to down the road, oh, in that case, we have to address the heir to the Empire, Thrawn. It's like, no, we don't have to.
Yeah.
Let's just keep Thrawn in the Rebels era. This is, and in your mind as a fan, you'll say, okay, what we've seen him do in Rebels makes sense because we can see how what transpires here in Rebels, it makes sense that eventually down the road, Thrawn will be here in Heir to the Empire. And that's all we need. We don't need to retell Heir to the Empire.
The thing is, it allows for the character to even, you know, you could even get to a point in the Rebels series where, say, Darth Vader kills Thrawn.
That's true.
Because not the Heir to the Empire Thrawn. This is the new canon Thrawn. You're going to be thrown this bone, but it's going to be fresh, and it's going to be different. And I think it's giving the fans, I think that this will help sort of salve that wound a bit. But you have to be prepared for things, the dynamic's going to be changing drastically. And I can applaud that. I would rather see that kind of Thrawn where he can be part of a whole different kind of story than just be shackled to the original source material.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. As a big fan of the expanded universe, you're right. It very much just got loose from the corral and just off, and it ran off in the pasture. Because the thing was, early on, when we had the Thrawn trilogy, and this is not Celebration related, but it seemed like they were going to try to direct the expanded universe very carefully, but instead the powers that be saw the money that was coming in from Heir of the Empire trilogy and they wanted more, so they did the exact same mistake that they did with Splinter of the Mind's Eye and the Lando books and the Han books. They shoved product out there too quick.
Oh yeah.
Like Heir to the Empire was amazing, but then they followed it up with some craptacular book, The Crystal Star, which was very much not a Star Wars story. It was a sci-fi story that had Luke and Leia, but then didn't, in no other respect, felt like it belonged in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, and that's the problem with a lot of anything where you're licensing out the material,
yeah,
you know, to like hundreds of Star Trek books. I'm sure to a lot of Star Trek fans, a lot of them felt like that'd be a great sci-fi story. Didn't necessarily need the Enterprise or Spock or Kirk or anybody else in it.
Exactly. And
it would have worked just fine without, but you wouldn't have been able to sell it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point, it becomes like any kind of licensed cartoon where, you know, oftentimes the writers of those cartoons recycle the same story from Thundercats to Brave Star to...
Well, I have
blank, it. And there are actual anecdotes about that.
Well, I have it from Buzz Dixon himself when Andy Farmer and I spoke to him at the G.I. Joe convention one year. He said, yeah, they pretty much said they just wanted them to recycle the same story that they used for Transformers to Brave Star to G.I. Joe. It's like the same basic story, you just switch out the characters.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of it feels like. And so... that actually comes around very nicely to something. I want to invoke a certain Star Wars iconic or soon to be iconic sound. That, of course, invoking the Rogue One trailer. The Rogue One trailer.
Oh, I thought that was like an infant Gilbert Godfrey at first or something.
Actually, that is the cry of the Loth Kittens.
Oh, is that?
Actually, they use that sound to attract infant Gilbert Godfreys.
Yes, which is
their principal dinner. Prey. Yeah, until they grow up, start hunting loth rats.
That would be the Loth Godfreys.
Yes, that's right. That's what the Rogue One celebration reel. Disney has been insanely shrewd because at Celebration was released a reel that's now available on YouTube. We'll have a link to that as well, of a Rogue One combo reel. It's like actual scenes and then behind-the-scenes scenes.
Yeah.
And the director and cinematographer and other production people are visible. Some of the actors are just talking casually about the roles or about the production itself. Very reminiscent of the reel that they put out for Episode 7.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, and I think, Eddie, you said before the show you watched it 10 times.
Yeah.
And I'd watched it a few times. I watched it with Catherine earlier, and we're both just like all choky. And I said, just like the Episode 7 reel.
Yeah.
It feels like Star Wars again. It just, I mean, to varying degrees, Episodes 1 through 3 get maligned. And I think in some respects very justifiably because they don't feel as much like Star Wars as Episode 7 or as Rogue One appears like it's going to be. Because, you know, amongst other things in that reel, here's a Death Star droid.
Yes.
You know, like they had to redesign the Death Star droid. Now, this is our Death Star droid. No. They use the same design. You've got some new variations on the Stormtrooper, which I accept because throughout Episodes 4 through 6, there are variations on the Stormtrooper.
Okay, let me talk about that for a minute, because this is the thing I liked about it. The fact that we do get the Stormtroopers, obviously, gets us right for New Hope. They would be there already. But, and because of Rebels, they're established in Rebels. But this is the thing about the other trooper that shows up. And it's very much the evolutionary step. It's got a little bit of a biker scout feel to it.
It does indeed.
I felt like I paused it because I thought, did I see a biker scout from the back? And I realized it wasn't. It was this new trooper. But there's something about the design of the trooper that's a step between one of the variations of the clone troopers from episode three, and the biker scout. It almost feels like a step between the two. So.
Yeah.
It seems like a nice evolutionary step between the prequels and, I guess now, a prequel to the sequel, the whatever it's called. So we have the prequels, now we have a prequel to New Hope, which is not a prequel.
Sequels.
Yes, a sequel, a prequel sequel.
A sequel
but anyway,
prequel.
Yeah, I like that, and I like the fact that they're giving us the Death Troopers on screen, but it's not the Death Trooper from the Power of the Force line that we were used to.
Yeah.
you know, or from the expanded universe. Everyone was expecting, when they heard Death Troopers, they're like, oh, it's the Death Troopers from the expanded universe novels. No! Like you said, this is the Death Troopers for this, for the movie.
As envisioned by the movie. But they're paying tribute, you know, they don't have to pay tribute to the book.
Yeah.
But they are paying due reverence to the films. And one of the biggest problems that you'll run into when someone else takes on the reins of a franchise is then, okay, you know, here's Rogue One is supposed to take place before Episode 6. I'm sorry, before Episode 4.
Yeah.
Which, of course, would be before Episode 6.
Yeah, of course.
But the problem is you'll oftentimes get very proprietary production designers in on these projects, which is a lot of P words, who want to come in and change everything. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, well, such and such designed that. I'm designing this movie. And they jettison everything. So nothing feels like it's out of the same universe. Mm-hmm. Why would the Empire have 27 different variations on the Stormtrooper that looked nothing like the original Stormtrooper you're accustomed to within a very short number of months or years before the action in the very first film? Mm-hmm. And I really applaud the designers of this, the production designers and the director and the studio, for not trying to redesign everything, not make it my version of what the Empire. Everything pays tremendous tribute to the way these things ought to look.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't often see that.
Well, it would, and this is what annoyed me about the, we went from Michael Keaton Batman to George Clooney Batman. Of the four movies, every Batman had to look different. Even the two Michael Keaton Batmans had to be different from one another. And that's what I was hoping they wouldn't do with something like this. Like where you're saying, well, this is my Stormtrooper. This is my, you know, this, that, and the other. This is my X-Wing.
Yeah,
you know,
but also, Batman's a wonderful example because I was casting about for a really good cinematic example. But at least in the two Keaton films, the Batman costume was enough similar that you could get away with it.
It was enough.
And the Batmobile stayed the same.
True.
Between the two Schumacher films, the Batmobile changed drastically. Everything changed. It's like, new production designer, new Batmobile, new production designer, new costume designer, new Batsuit.
It got so bad by the fourth one, Batman and Robin. He was changing suits like three or four times during the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's and crazy. So
I like the fact that if you look at the costuming, if you look at the props, if you look at a lot of the specific little elements that give it that Lucas lived-in universe,
yeah,
you see tremendous reverence being paid to the fact that the one thing you have in a Star Wars universe is a bunch of shipping containers laying around, or you have you know, a certain feel to the way costume elements look.
Yeah.
That it's so easy to just jettison all that in favor of, well, this is my film, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And it's like, that's all well and good, but you don't change everything, or you risk seeming like you're something else entirely.
Right. You know, now that we're talking about the Rogue One, what are they calling it again? It's not a teaser, but it's a.
It's basically being called the celebration reel.
That's right, celebration reel. Okay, I knew there was a term. I'm surprised that the first thing out of your mouth wasn't the bluish gray Akbar that we saw.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that there are Mon Calamari made me incredibly happy.
And that it wasn't just a different color Mon Calamari; it was actually a heftier look.
Yeah, it looks like a chubby, like the, you know, the.
Well, it shows that just like with us human beings, we all look different from one another. All Mon Calamari don't have to look the same. They don't have to be the same body build.
Yeah.
You know, this one could have a double chin or goiter or whatever that is.
Yeah, I think that was the goiter.
Yeah, that's the George Lucas tribute.
Yeah.
Just like the, you know, he was a stormtrooper at one point.
It's like Suklar, the Mon Calamari.
Yeah, Sukalar.
Well, what are you talking about? It has nothing to do with George Lucas.
Yeah, right. But
in fact, if there's anything about Star Wars, the modern incarnation of Star Wars, between Episode 7 and some of the shots in this reel, the only thing that I am troubled by is the modern director necessity, it seems, of having people fly about 20 feet in the air when there's an explosion.
Uh-huh.
Because yeah. You see that in Episode 7, you see that in this reel, and you know when you see the unretouched footage, it's because they're yanking these stuntmen away on a bungee. But you know, that wasn't a part of the nearby explosion vernacular. You just sort of did it like you did it in the 50s. Even in the 70s, you just sort of leapt away.
You jumped. Yeah, you didn't do the Michael Bay 20 flips in the air, landing.
And really?
And then you land on a transformer and everything
that's
else.
That's right. Get impaled on Optimus Prime's pinky because he's having his pinky.
let's hope it was his pinky. No!
Oh, no. As long as it wasn't Constructicons, we're safe.
Right. I'm believing the
Michael Bay Transformers will understand where I'm going with that.
Are there fans of the Michael Bay Transformers?
Viewers of,
yes. Okay,
there were viewers. But yes, Celebration 7 seems to have brought us so much, and you don't necessarily have to have been there to get in on the revelation of Thrawn or this Celebration reel, which is the wonderful part of our modern world.
Well, hold on before you go anywhere else. The Celebration reel, we have to talk about our mutual favorite part of it. Who we think is going to be our favorite character of the movie.
Oh, yes, of course.
Go to the 2-minute, 5-second mark in the reel. You'll see what we're talking about. And Cole, what is that?
Absolutely. That is where you will see just after walk on the beach stormtrooper scene.
Yeah. Yeah,
or, you know, casual walk in the surf, which I love because you can see some of the production boats. This is obviously not one of the scenes from the film because you can see the boats for the.
I totally thought of it was a Ralph Lauren commercial.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah,
the slow walking. Either that or the tombstone of Star Wars. You know, Wyatt Earp and his clan. You know, walk into the OK Corral very slowly, But no, that would be a certain creature that pops up at the 2-minute mark.
Yes, indeed. Right at around 205, 206, somewhere in that, there's some direction being given, and then you get this wonderful shot off the shoulder of the camera crew of a character I have personally referred to as Laughing Boy. I don't know who this character is, but it is already, like you said, a personal favorite of both of ours.
Yeah, because my gosh, if they have not done anything else right, which they have done plenty right, but if they have not done anything else right with Episode 7, it looks to be like now with Rogue One, is the on-target creature design of these
movies.
So unique and creative, and it feels like 1977, 1980, 1983 creatures.
Yeah, this guy feels very much like about an 80. It put me in the mind of Neen Num.
Yeah,
Bringing something fresh to the character design, but yet still firmly anchored in the Star Wars universe.
What has been one of my favorite things about Episode 7 is just admiring the creature and the costume design of that movie. I'm not one to obsess over costume design, but I especially started to appreciate it when the Episode 7 digital cards started coming out on the app on my phone, and I was collecting all these cards, and I thought, dang, the design of some of this armor and clothing and stuff was just, you just can't appreciate it for the half second, 2 seconds that these characters are on the screen. It's amazing what they're doing.
Yeah, so watch this thing. If you haven't already, then you owe it to yourself to watch it. The only thing I would say is caution is to learn from the lessons that Episode 7 trailers and the very similar reel of this kind that was behind the scenes stuff. Don't write the story ahead of time. I mean, the second that first trailer came out, everybody was immediately assuming that what's her name was, she's an Imperial spy! Yeah, because no rebel or, you know, right. No anti-imperial ever dresses an imperial to sneak past them, except always.
Yeah, right. Or the fact that, you know,
except
maybe,
like all the damn time. Nobody ever dressed up as somebody they weren't to.
Or, it's like they did it.
Luke Han Leia!
Right, they did it in episode 4. They did it in Return of the Jedi when they flew the Shuttle Tidarium right out to the moon of Endor.
Not to mention Leia, disguising herself as a bounty hunter.
As a bounty hunter, exactly.
But, you know, there's irrefutable proof in seeing her in a TIE fighter pilot that she's a turncoat.
and okay, since we're talking about creatures real quick before we get out of here, even more brief than I was calling him the barking laughing guy, but because he kind of has like a bark laugh.
Yeah, it does have kind of a nice little guttural laugh to him.
Yeah,
fits the design of the character, by the way.
Exactly,
and it reminds big ass throat.
And for whatever reason, it reminds me of Keenser from the new Star Trek movies. But that's,
oh, yeah. That's a deep character.
Yeah. But what also got my attention that only showed up, it was like such a brief half second, it took me forever to pause it just right. But that's the White Yeti creature thing.
Oh,
that
yes, the friendly Wampa. Yeah, there's a bunch of quick shots.
The friendly Wampa. This is the Wampa for nowadays because everyone's right. So easily offended.
We want
a Wampa that won't offend anybody.
That's right. He's a happy, friendly Wampa.
He won't cause. And, you know, the old Wampa, he was making people have to go to their happy place too much. Yeah. You know.
And this is the Wampa of our times. This is the Wampa we need. The Wampa we deserve.
Right, exactly. Thank you for that, Christopher Nolan. But what I liked about this is when I've said this before on the show, when I first saw the trailer for New Hope and I saw Chewbacca, I immediately thought, oh, Space Bigfoot. That's where we got the term.
That's right, Space Bigfoot.
Well, when I saw this, I thought, oh, Space Yeti.
I guess it has gone full circle for you.
Right, it has. So I'm really excited because now I get Space Yeti to go along with my Space Bigfoot.
And who knows, as the Star Wars films continue, you'll eventually get – here, I actually found Space Yeti or Friendly Wampa can be found at about the 256 mark.
256, okay.
And, I love the design of this creature.
I'm waiting for Space Loch Ness, which I guess
– I was going to say, maybe with – you know, as the films go on, you'll get Space Mothman and
Space
Chupacabra and
– I like how you said that with an accent.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where you have to drop into a specific Spanish accent
right.
And say certain words.
Yeah, you did. You went into like your
like
Antonio,
borders, you know.
Antonio Banderas
voice
there.
Yeah, you just drop right back into the Spanish origins.
Right. Oh, but I mean, and then we got the fact that James Earl Jones has recorded his dialogue for Rogue One. Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait. And
16 million for it or something.
Oh, and it's so cool. The fact that this looks like it's taking place on some sort of tropical planet. We've talked before, Cole, about the planets of Star Wars, about how, you know, we went from New Hope where it was a desert planet to the Death Star to Yavin. And then, like, as a kid, I thought it was so cool that we went to a snow planet to a swamp planet to a cloud city. And, like, now, you thought, well, we visited all these types of planets. We had the water planet and Attack of the Clones. It never occurred to me there hasn't been a tropical planet.
And we haven't been to Jamaica planet, Mom.
Right. So Scarif, apparently, is the name of this planet.
Okay. Yeah. So Scarif is a planet you'd go like on – it would be like one of the stops on your intergalactic cruise.
That would be like the planet Ryza in Next Generation.
Yeah, it's like a port of call. You go there,
right.
And they unload the ship, and all the tourists pour out and buy trinkets from Space Yetis, and then they go back.
Well, the Space Yetis who carries your luggage from.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
Yeah. He's a beast of burden, basically.
Exactly.
Oh.
If you look at him, he looks like he is carrying some tourist luggage there, so.
He's got something, yeah. He's got something. All the new creatures seem to be carrying something in Episode 7 and this one.
Yeah, everybody's
or dragging something.
Yeah, they've got it. Like they're always on the go. They're busily toting bales or luggage or
It's something.
The files, or they've got to get to court with all these briefs or what have you. So, but, you know, to bring this back around to Celebration, we're probably, I think, if I'm not mistaken, less than a year away from Celebration, what would it be, Celebration 8?
I think it's under a year, yeah.
Just under a year from Celebration 8, so there is the no way I'm going to make it, but because I probably should have booked a hotel 3 years ago.
Right.
But what was amazing, though, as late as Catherine and I booked our hotel for Celebration 6, we didn't have any trouble getting a hotel, which is kind of remarkable. And odd thing is, you know, most of the and it's going to be in Orlando again, so most of the attendees were staying at this massive hotel, just like a very short, brisk walk across the street to the convention center. We were about 3/4 mile down the road, maybe, at an unassuming Best Western that was like way less than half per night. I mean, talking tremendously less than half per night. And it was worth the occasional walk or, you know, hiring a pedicab or what have you.
See, I would have gone with a KOA campground personally.
Well, that's you like the camping.
I like the camping, yeah. Unless the KOA campgrounds are, they're synonymous with Florida landscapes. You know, there's just as many KOA campgrounds as there are gators there.
Oh, wow. There you go. And some of you don't have gators, I'm sure. So, you know, we'll definitely be in touch with those who are attending so we can do some coverage before, hopefully during, and especially after. So, you know, be sure and if you're attending, let us know because we'd love to hear some stories. Again, anybody who might have heard us, who we might be able to record some of your reminiscences about Celebration Europe, let us know. And you know, if you get a chance to attend a Celebration anytime in the next few years, because it looks like that's going to continue to go strong, just go out there, check it out. There's some amazing opportunities. You know, Catherine and I got to see a presentation with Warwick Davis, which is amazing. He's a fascinating actor and producer and agent, and just it's amazing what Star Wars did for him as a career. Jumping off point, and that, but for that one chili dog, the legendary chili dog, is apocryphally. I'm not sure if it was actually a chili dog or what that kept Kenny Baker out of being Wicket. But
well, is that the panel, the Warwick Davis panel? Is that the one that was called "I'm Down Here, Man"?
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, sir, no. Bad me, bad me.
Bad. So our chances of getting Warwick Davis on this show went from 0.000-something to straight to zero.
Right. What are the odds, 3PO?
Oh, yeah, never tell you the odds on that one. So, again, you know, if you get a chance, attend the celebrations. If you have some stories to tell about Celebration Europe, drop us a line, or perhaps we can record something with you on the show, because we'd love to hear from you. And you can, of course, write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Check out our Facebook page. The Rancor Pit is on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel where Eddie has been diligently preserving our past live shows, plus the Rancor bits that he's been producing, because just some amazing stuff. Eddie's like constantly out there making this happen. I'm like, wait, how did I need to be doing some of this stuff. I need to learn how to
stop going out of town when there's events.
I know.
It's like you're scheduling them on purpose.
I know. It's like, well, I'll just send Eddie. He's like the vice president. He has to go to all the functions. And look for tweets at the Jedi Cole U, and watch Eddie and myself. If you missed us earlier today, as you're listening to this, this would be we just did the second of three episodes of The Force of July on our on the Rancor Pit Live from the One Eye Joe Studios in Dallas. On watchonairlive.com, you can go to the Watch on Air Live website and scroll down. You'll find the Rancor Pit Live. You can see archived episodes there as well. And also, if you happen to catch us on the first and third Sundays of the month, and in 2 weeks on the fifth Sunday of this month, and if you're not tired of us by then, the very next week on the first Sunday of August, you can catch us on the first and third Sundays of the month generally from noon to 1 p.m. Central, watchonairlive.com with the Rancor Pit Live with me, Eddie, and, of course, the Talk Lord of the Sith himself, our producer, Zach Schroeder.
Yes, and in a mere, okay, because you're listening to this on the 17th or possibly later, in a mere 3 weeks, come see me and Cole live at Infinicon.
Yes, indeed.
August 5th through 7th. And while you're there that weekend, come find us and get our new, to debut that weekend, our new Rancor Pit trading card.
Yes, indeed. It will be a brand new design, a brand new format that Eddie put together, and it just looks dynamite. And it's not as convoluted in the descriptions as mine are. So that'll be a plus as well. And Eddie has left space for us to audit for you. So.
Yes, there'll be a little white box on the back. If you find us, you can have us sign it. And hopefully these are, if people like these, this will be number one in a series of different trading cards that you'll collect over the years from the Rancor Pit. So
I also want to thank Eddie for pointing out that part of the force, the upside of the Force of July with us doing three shows in 1 month is, you just reminded us, the first Sunday of the month, we will be at Infinicon, so we will not have a live show that Sunday after all.
Oh, okay. Unless I can be there. I'm not sure yet. I had to look at the Infinicon schedule.
Yeah, so. I need to as well. We may actually go ahead and pull it off because we're not going to we're not going to be too terribly far away. We may just drive over, do the show, and run back over to Infinicon.
I did it for AllCon. I think we might be able to pull it off for Infinicon. So let's keep that as a TBA.
Yeah, we will let you know on the fifth Sunday of July when we officially announce yay or nay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I think on Sunday we can get away with it. All right. And as far as the audio show, we'll be back here in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense. We are working on doing a show all about the Dark Lord of the Sith, Darth Vader. We've talked about his origins as Anakin, but we've really not explored Darth Vader himself. And a good friend of mine and a listener of the show, David Buns, who's been on the show before, I found an old email where he said, you know, if you ever do a show on Darth Vader, ... So
we're going to see. Very subtle there, David.
Yes, indeed. So we're calling you out, David. If we can work it out, that may be our topic for the next pre-recorded show. But regardless of what we talk about, we'll be back here in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.